Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, come on down. You're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in north central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to eat, but mostly drink. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
Well, hello you. Terrible Tommy here. Let me tell you one thing before we get started here. Do not send checks or money orders to White Aryan Resistance. We'll just keep that as insurgent. That way I don't have to change things around at the bank. So just make sure you just send your checks to the insurgent, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, and everybody will be fine. Yeah, it is the 4th of September, 2014. Nice day out there, too. Another beautiful Midwest day. Not too humid, a little bit of humidity, but not bad. Well, I had breakfast this morning with a World War II veteran. How about that? He's 91 years old. Got to fill me in on a few things. We agreed on a hell of a lot, I'll tell you that. The only problem is he's still into the Bible. And he's still into the Jesus thing. Otherwise, we agreed on about everything. Very pleasant chat this morning. With a 90, and I'll tell you what, he didn't look a day over 80 years old either. Maybe he didn't look that much older than I did. He was in World War II. Oh, geez. Thanks for getting the donations in for the radio show. The earlier the better. And if you end up getting, say, a month behind time, or maybe not quite a month, you're going to get dropped, baby, I'll tell you. We had to drop a couple of people. But anyhow, I think sometimes they just pay for a month just out of curiosity, and then they go on down the road there and decide that, hey, man, that guy ain't right wing enough for me, and he don't worship the baby Jesus, and he says some nasty things about the government of the United States and the Republican Party and the Democrats. I don't know. No way. I had something really strange happen to me today. I was looking to hook up with this fellow I had breakfast with, and the name of his street came right up. I saw it on the map, put in my GPS, and away I went. Went around, found the street, went around the block about four times, and it's only one block long, and he's in the 300 block. So what the hell's going on here? So I continued on in towards town, and the GPS said, no, you go north, and you go up here, and you go, you know, and I kept going and going and going. Turned out there's another street, the same name. I can't believe they'd have two streets in the town the same name. So I was screwed up there for a while. I was clear on where I was headed was on the other side of town. The people who got that one block street by the same name as the other street should change that, because a lot of people are going to go to the one and get lost, because the other one's a long way off, man. Probably about 5 miles difference. Well, I see there's a preacher down in Tennessee who vows not to repent for homophobia. Well, depends on how homophobia it is, whether he's going to kill a guy or what. But as far as I'm concerned, whatever anybody's opinion is their opinion, so what? And if the preacher says he don't like homosexuals, we don't even know what reasons, but maybe it's because of his religion, probably. But the point is that who cares if somebody doesn't like homosexuals and you want to say you don't like homosexuals, just say you don't like homosexuals. And if you think homosexuals are wonderful, that's your business, you know. But they get all excited if people don't bow and scrape and say, oh my God, he said he didn't like homosexuals, and we know to be a real citizen of the United States, you have to love homosexuals. Well, what if the homosexual's a real dick? Can you hate him twice? Yeah. I don't know about you, but I can go for days without even thinking about a homosexual. Yeah. Well, I just want to make you so damn happy you'll just roll over and somebody will have to scratch your belly, man, because we got the Duck Man, Duck Dynasty, Phil Robertson's on the Hannity Show. And talk about two insane people, or at least my opinion, insane. Listen to this, because we got Bible talk here, baby.
Welcome back to Hannity. New video surfaced earlier today showing the brutal execution of captured American journalist Stephen Sotloff by ISIS terrorists. Now, this comes just 2 weeks after the radical Islamic group posted a similar video documenting the beheading of journalist James Foley. So how should America deal with the simultaneous rise of radical Islam around the globe and a rising tide of anti-Semitism and anti-Christian behavior, as we saw convert or die in Mosul? Joining me now, the patriarch of Duck Dynasty, the author of the brand new book, Unfiltered, The Way I See It. Yay. I got it right here, the one and only Phil Robertson. How are you, my friend?
Doing good.
Good to see you. Welcome aboard.
Good to see you, man.
You don't leave home without it. You brought your Bible with you.
I never leave home without my Bible and my woman, Hannity. That's good advice for you.
Is that good advice? I'm never allowed to go out alone?
Well,
my wife
safety,
would get bored.
Safety.
Is that
woman
what
and Bible. You got it?
Now, you dedicated this to your book to Miss Kay, which I thought was really nice. Let me ask you first. I wrote a book once, Deliver Us From Evil, about, I think, good people have a hard concept understanding evil. That book talks about...
You mean George Bush Jr.?
About evil that you got there in front of you.
You betcha.
The Lord's Prayer says, deliver us from evil. I think you're a preacher at heart. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But if anybody could cut off somebody's head like that and then put children's head on stakes, isn't that evil in our time? And how?
Well, they've been cutting off heads for centuries. Thousands of years they've been cutting off heads. And the Saudi Arabians are cutting them off by the dozen right now. What about that? You love those Saudi Arabians, don't you, Sean? Yeah, right.
Should we deal with it?
Worldwide, planet-wide, biblically speaking, two groups of people, the children of God, and the whole world is under the control of the evil one.
Whoa!
That's 1 John 5:19.
Yeah.
Ephesians 2 said, look, the evil one works in those who are disobedient. Galatians 3, they are prisoners of sin. 2 Timothy 2, the Bible says that they've been taken captive by Satan to do his will. Listen, let me show you one. I've got the old...
You notice how the Christians worship the Bible. I don't think they worship God or Jesus, they worship the Bible.
Hey, America, Declaration of Independence, it's my bookmarker. Don't forget that.
Right.
Listen to this, Sean. Solomon, one of the wisest men on earth, if not the wisest. He's speaking of wisdom. Whoever finds me wisdom finds life. Watch. And receives favor from the Lord. But whoever fails to find me, this is the God of the Bible, harms himself. Now listen to this. On this ISIS thing, all who hate me love death. So you scratch your head and you say, well, why is it that when we're not even over there in the Middle East, why do they continue to slaughter each other?
See, now you can't even get on television to talk about race, but this guy can get on there, weirdo with a beard down to his belly button, talking bullshit for a long, long time. Yeah, that's because the people who run the show say, fine, put the idiots on there. Yeah.
And we're not even on the premises. They can't blame us. We left Iraq. You say, what happened in Egypt, in Syria? You say, Libya. They just slaughter each other. You say, what? All who hate me love death. Sean?
What is the answer? The answer, I think the only answer is, I think they're at war with us.
Yep.
Whether we like it or not, I think most people would rather live in...
I think the answer is to put both you bastards in a nut house. That's what I think.
Peace. Most Americans, just leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. They're not going to leave us alone. They're not going to leave Israel alone. So that leaves us with two...
Don't forget Israel, baby. Don't forget Israel. You got to get that tongue right in there and kiss their ass, baby.
Two options. Do nothing, and then get ready for the next attack, and then we'll have a report that says they were at war with us, we weren't at war with them.
In this case, you either have to convert them, which I think is would be next to impossible. I'm not giving up on them, but I'm just saying either convert them or kill them. One or the other.
You know, that's going to be...
That time has come and gone, so I think that...
Well, what about Jesus saying, you know, all those nice things, love thy enemy? What about that love thy enemy, Mr. Duckman?
But with this ideology that we're faced with, this is like street gang, street thugs on steroids. You think about it, most of the wars we've fought, they were not asymmetrical like this one. This one, it's not like a country with a standing army.
I can't take any more of that crap. They're treating this guy like he's an expert. The ISIS got the thing figured out. They're fanatics just like the Christians, but they're more fanatic. And they fight well. And it's the fighting well and the success of the military operations that scares the hell out of people. They want to scare the sheep by going on and on about a couple of cut-off heads while the Saudi Arabians cut them off every week, cutting more and more heads off. Sean Hannity would never say anything about that because they're our oil buddies. They're our oil buddies. We're never going to touch the Saudis no matter how many 9/11s happen. So isn't that what the ISIS people say? Islamics, convert them or kill them. So what's the difference between Sean Hannity and the duck man and the Islamics? They're all saying the same thing. Either convert or we'll kill you. Well, here's an email from one of our associates. Before Israel was founded, the British wanted to give Madagascar to the Jews as a homeland. I think you're mistaken. I think it was the Germans that wanted to give Madagascar to the Jews as a homeland. The British were distracted by some sort of a problem that I don't feel like looking up. Well, what happened? The Germans sent their engineers and scientific people over to Madagascar to evaluate the feasibility of putting the Jews in Madagascar, but they came away saying they couldn't make it on Madagascar. So that's another interesting thing. If they really wanted all the Jews dead, why didn't they say, oh, it's a wonderful place, and put them all out there, and then they would have died off? But they didn't do that. They said this is not, due to many reasons, it's not feasible. Anyhow, the person goes on to say it is an island, so the Jews would have a moat. There are no moats anymore. We have jet planes, and we have rockets. We've got satellite communications. There are no such thing as a moat anymore. The population is poor and seems more manageable than the Arabs. Well, they're not exactly peaceful, though. I'm afraid that they would have given people a lot of trouble that would have immigrated there and sat down. They would need them to mine the Vermelho garnets, which are exquisite and popular, especially with me. And I'm not familiar with that fruit, I guess. It is so rich in natural resources. It is beautiful with gorgeous flora and fauna. Well, it takes a lot more than flora and fauna to support a tribe and civilization. Why not make the Israeli state there? they would probably be welcome. Well, you're not going to do it. They're where they're at now, and until it collapses, that's it. So talking about at this late date, putting the Jews on Madagascar is a waste of time. Everyone would be happy if some of the natives object why we would let them come here, doesn't everybody? Well, I agree with that. Let's see, something else here. If London Bridge could be moved to America, the Israeli structures, nukes, and so on could be moved to Madagascar. Well, yeah, it's possible, but it's not going to happen. But he says, I'm serious. Jews would have to abandon their unwholesome fixation on Israel. Well, no, that's their main chip, man, in the game. They got to have that for propaganda value with all the Christ insanity people, the Christian Zionists. God is not a real estate agent. He doesn't appoint where we will live. Thank goodness. I'm not worried about some God being involved in real estate. Christians and Muslims also have this attachment to Jerusalem that they should get over. It's just a place and not a very picturesque one at that. Well, you know, come on. I mean, you know, that's where the baby Jesus is buried at. You know, that's where the manger was, man. You can't talk that way, man. Once Israel is in Madagascar, the Middle East could sort itself out without our money or our blood. No. As long as it's a big oil deal, it'll never be solved. There'll never be peace in the Middle East as long as there is this tremendous thoughtful need for oil. That's right. Muslims controlled everything from Spain over to India at one time, and for a long time they did that. They weren't fighting about oil. They didn't have oil to fight over. So the minute oil came on the scene, everything went to hell. Greed, baby, greed. Anyhow, don't waste your time thinking about the Jews moving to Madagascar. That's funny. Well, they say that the ISIS army, the Islamic State army, killed 770 Iraqi soldiers back in June at Camp Peisher near the city of Tikrit. That wouldn't be that hard to do because these guys, the only reason they were in an army in Iraq at all was because the United States was paying them big money, or, you know, by their standards, big money. Other than that, say boo and they run like hell. An army as committed as ISIS come along, oh man, they'd run twice as fast. Well. U.S. troops are headed to the Ukraine. While only humanitarian advisor boots on the ground are present in Iraq and Syria, Reuters reports that preparations are underway near Ukraine's western border for a joint military exercise this month with more than 1,000 troops from the United States and its allies. Oh, won't that be fun? Wonder how Putin's going to feel about that. Well, it looks like Craig Cobb may be spreading some karma over there in North Dakota. Is Craig Cobb getting even? Well, you know how they're going, the oil business and the fracking and all that is going through the roof in North Dakota. And labor-wise, it's unemployment's down to almost zero, maybe 0.2% or something like that. But the point is, guess what? They're using every piece of railroad equipment they can get to haul the oil out. Yeah, well, of course, they want to get all that oil out because there's a lot of money. But what's the byproduct of the side effect on that? North Dakota farmers can't get their grain to market. They've got a super bumper crop of grain there, the farmers do, and they're being frozen out because the railroads are filling up with oil and oil production to get it out. And so it looks like they're going to be driving a lot of farmers out of business in North Dakota. Craig, you've been sticking those pins in dolls lately, man. I think you got I think you got karma working on North Dakota, man. I'll tell you, it's something else.
I want to move on here. There is an unusual phenomenon happening in North Dakota, well, across the country. And I wanted to get to this last night, but we ran out of time. As you know, the energy exploration in North Dakota has exploded. It has reduced unemployment in that state to below 2.8%, or at 2.8%. Now, anything below 3%, I've been told, economists consider that to be full employment. No, I don't know what the numbers mean either. But it's safe to say, then, that anyone who wants a job in North Dakota has one, and people are coming into that state from various parts of the country for that particular reason, to go to work. And these are not chump jobs. It's my understanding that people who work in fast food joints start out at $16-$17 an hour. Isn't that amazing? And everybody's making money. Everybody is making a living, and the economy's not collapsing. Of course, the problem is they're pulling death out of the ground and spreading death all over the planet. But who cares at this point? There's a different problem involved here. The pace at which this oil exploration and gas exploration and recovery is occurring in North Dakota is, according to the New York Times the other day, creating a crisis for farmers whose grain shipments have been held up because of this vast movement of oil by rail. Oh, well, Mike, that's another reason to put in the pipelines. Yeah. Now, this leads to millions of dollars in agricultural losses and slower production for example, companies like General Mills. Not that you care. I know. You don't eat dry cereal, right? The farmers are saying out there that the backlog is only going to get worse because they're preparing this week for what is expected to be a record crop of wheat and soybeans. A record. One of the farmers who grows soybeans, wheat, and sugar beets about 20 miles west of Fargo said, quote, if we can't get this stuff out soon, a lot of it is simply going to go on the ground and rot. What a problem, huh? Now, the downside of that low unemployment rate is that it's been it's producing hard times for farmers who have, since forever, been the main driving force of North Dakota's economy. According to Times, for decades, agriculture was North Dakota's number one industry. It represents a quarter of its economic base. But recent statistics show that oil and gas have become the biggest contributors to the state's gross domestic product. So farmers, you're no longer important. What's important is killing the planet. Now, arguably, and I don't mean there's an argument here. I just mean arguably, farmers are in the business of life. The arguably part comes in where it concerns farmers who are using genetically modified organisms or GMOs. But let's set that argument aside for just a moment and think about this. Farmers produce life and the means to sustain human life. And they do it by working their asses off. I mean, really, come on. I'm not talking about corporate, you know, behemoth industrial. I'm talking about farmers. That's been the driving force of the economy in North Dakota and other states, for that matter. But when you consider it in a very simplistic way, which is exactly what I'm doing because I'm a very simplistic person regarding some of these issues, a lot of these issues are clearly black or white to me. I don't go gray very often. I can't. And as a result, somebody like me, we never get what we really want or what we really see as absolutely critical to survival. We just don't get it because we are these stupid ass, it's black, it's white types. which makes me kind of sad, but that's the way it is. So anyway, farmers create life, and the products they create that are alive are given to human beings to sustain life. The oil and gas industry, on the other hand, is also involved in the earth, but not to put things in to grow. No. See what I mean by simplicity? Here I go. The oil and gas industry punches holes in the earth, big, nasty-ass, ripping, tearing holes, and they extract, if you want to go this far, the fluids that might be considered the lifeblood of the planet. I mean, who knows? Tectonic plates sit on this stuff? Okay, not tectonic plates. shale and rock formations underneath the earth. So when you suck the stuff out, what happens? Well, check with the Oklahoma Geologic Survey, and they will tell you what happens. How many hundreds of earthquakes have they had there this year as compared to last year, as compared to 5 years ago? What is the newest driving industries in Oklahoma? Fracking. Am I getting too far afield here? I think I am. So anyway, farmers who produce life versus the oil and gas industry that produces death. You can't argue that point successfully with me, or form a counter argument to that successfully with me. I'll just put my fingers in my ears and say, la, 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 I can't hear you.
Real. So, why do we need oil? Why do we need gas? For more and more millions of Mexicans and Latin Americans and Somalians and everybody that's flooding into the country, and also growing birth rates in these countries, so they can drive around. They need to drive around. All those Somalians that have come over here, there's thousands of them in Ohio. They're all over the country, those black boys, and all those Mexicans, and all those Central Americans, now all these Asians. They need the oil. They need to drive that car. In fact, they usually got three or four cars, right? Who needs grain? Who needs corn? Who needs wheat, soybeans? Let it rot in the field. We got to get that oil on the railroad train and get it where it's going so we can smog the hell out of things, right? Well, that's what's happening. That's what's happening. And that is... I guess that's Craig Cobb's karma on North Dakota. What do you think? But unfortunately, it affects us all, one way or another. Hey, remember this guy? He's the guy who armed and trained the extreme nut jobs to battle the Soviets, who, in spite of all their faults, were trying to modernize Afghanistan. He's the guy who gave the Taliban and bin Laden blank checks for weapons training and propaganda support. All this happened back in 1979. Reagan and Bush, one, continued it for 12 years. Well, he's back. He's back. Let's listen to what he's got to say. Let's hear what he was saying back in 1979 when he was talking to the Taliban, Pakistan, so forth over there. The Taliban. Let's see what he says. He came to Pakistan to give the Taliban their land and told them, God is on your side.
U.S. National Security Advisor Brzezinski flew to Pakistan to set about rallying resistance. He wanted to arm the Mujahideen without revealing America's role. On the Afghan border near the Khyber Pass, he urged the soldiers of God to redouble their efforts.
We know of their deep belief in God, and we are confident that their struggle will succeed. That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day, because your fight will prevail. and you'll have your homes and your mosques back again, because your cause is right and God is on your side.
Be an outstanding friend and somebody who I've learned an immense amount from, and for him to support me in this campaign and then be willing to come out here to Iowa is a testimony to his generosity. So if everybody could please give Dr. Brzezinski another round of applause.
So Dr. Strangelove came back after setting it up for the CIA and everybody early on against the Soviets, setting up the Taliban in the very beginning, and they came out of the woodwork supporting Obama. Brzezinski, he's back. If you've ever seen the film Dr. Strangelove, he fits the bill, I'll tell you that. You might find this interesting. The Islamic State group on Tuesday released that photo, a video showing the beheading of American Jewish journalist Stephen Skotlov. The Israeli Foreign Ministry revealed on Wednesday that Skotlov, just a minute here, also held Israeli citizenship. A video released in August showed the Islamic State's beheading of American journalist James Foley. In the new video obtained by the Site Intelligence Group, the 31-year-old Skotlov is seen in the desert bound and held at knife point by a terrorist dressed in black. Well, I'll tell you what, another thing too, I don't know whether you got a good look at the parents of the other fellow, I forget what his name, Foley, but I say his mother looked very Jewish, and I submit to you that I think these guys are picking out Jews from these people they've kidnapped and so forth. So for what it's worth, to protect Skotlov, his Jewish identity and Israeli citizenship had been under a gag order before the execution. A Miami native, he made Aliyah in 2008 to pursue an undergraduate degree at the Interdisciplinary Center, IDC, in Herzliya. Kidnapped in August 2013 while reporting on the Syrian civil war, he pretended to be sick in order to fast for Yom Kippur that year. Quote, he told them that he was ill and didn't want to eat, even though they brought us eggs that day, unquote. One of Skotlov's fellow captives told Yadiath Abranath newspaper, it looked like he was praying in a hidden way towards Jerusalem. He noted that way the Muslims were praying in and changed his direction slightly. So they figured it out. He was a Jew. And there you go. That's showbiz. If I can get this crazy ass. Hold it. I've got a problem here. I've got a problem. I can't get my recorder back on the screen here. And to do it. What's this? Is this another governor convicted of corruption? If it is, I can't believe it. Of course, I know there's Democrat governors that are corrupt also, that's for sure. Ex-Governor McDonald and wife, living the high life, convicted after corruption trial. Oh, we have wonderful leaders in this country. Yep, just shows you one thing. When they get the power and they rise to the top, they all get touched. Well, isn't this peachy? Washington, the Justice Department, what a laugh, will open a broad civil rights investigation into police practices in Ferguson, Missouri. Surprise, surprise. Where a white cop officer killed an unarmed black teenager last month and set off days of racial rioting. They say unrest. Unrest my ass. Rioting. The city's police chief and other officials said Wednesday. The inquiry is in addition to the FBI civil rights investigation that is looking specifically into the shooting of the teenage little boy, Michael Brown. Well, you know, there's been dozens of white racial activists murdered in the last 20 years, at least in this country. And not only did not the feds investigate, FBI and so forth, but even local cops barely investigated the murder of our comrades. Don't forget that. If you want to know how justice works, this is how justice works. And I guess the Islamic State, ISIS, they know how justice works too. Looks like a few people are upset with this. The American Legion's new national commander, Michael D. Helm, took issue with President Barack Obama's support for a 1% pay raise in 2015 for members of the armed forces. There you go, stupid. Go out there and get your ass blown off. He's going to give you a 1% pay raise.
This is why I'm away.
Whoa. Elected for a one-year term during the Legion's 96th Annual National Convention in Charlotte. Well, anyhow, quote, with a war in Afghanistan, boots on the ground in Iraq, and ISIS on the loose in the Middle East, is a 1% salary raise really the best we can do for the men and women we expect to fight for the corporations? Hell no! Dumbasses. I think even Burger King gives better raises than that. Well, I see the federal government has sent more than 37,000 illegal alien kids to adults in every part of the U.S. who claim to be their guardians. Yeah, during the first 7 months of 2014. 37,000. Now, these kids coming out of Honduras are not like kids you see playing at the playground here in the United States. Many of them are already hardcore criminals at the age of 10 or 12. Plus the fact that a lot of these people who are claiming them are going to use them as sex slaves and everything else. Oh, what a wonderful State Department we have. What a wonderful State Department we have. Oh, you ask, what's that got to do with the State Department? Well, almost everything bad that's happening inside this country and outside this country has the State Department behind it. So if you want to point your finger or something else at anybody, it's the State Department. Well, another drunk, so-called KKK wannabe is going to get it. Kentucky man paints KKK wants you to burn on the neighbor's fence. Pours gasoline on their doorsteps. The frightened Negro family told the police that Douglas Pointer, 51, was found on the other side of the vile message while covered in paint and so drunk he could barely stand up. When they confronted him, he allegedly grabbed a shotgun and vowed to kill them all. There you go. Keep on drinking, KKK boys. That'll really help things out. Well, I see that Joan Rivers, the comedian, dies. Wow. How about that? She was 81. And maybe it's because of the thing she said about the Palestinians a couple of weeks ago. Boy, she really told them, said, kill them all, kill them all. Maybe the Palestinians got to her. Who knows? Hey, did you know that George Bush Jr.'s daughters are not Republicans? Gee, I wonder why. Then President Bush walks behind his daughter Jen and Hager, son-in-law Henry Hager. There's a picture on here. Yeah, I guess they're Democrats, or maybe they joined the Communist Party. I don't know. What do I know? Well, this is interesting. Yeah, it is, if I can get it in here. The fight over Amurli in eastern Iraq has been one of the most important battles against ISIS, and a coalition of unlikely partners successfully defending the strategically located town. The response to ISIS push against the town was likely formulated by Qassem Soleimani, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds force, and probably the Middle East's most effective operative. Soleimani leads the Guards operation outside of Iran's borders and has raked in a number of major strategic victories over the years. So you had to call on the Iran after all. So now you don't want to bomb Iran. You want to recruit their officers to pull your ass out of a jam. Oh, boy. It's getting crazier and crazier. It seems Soleimani has never been content with hanging back in Tehran. He's a field commander, and his successes stem from his apparent willingness to be physically present in the midst of regional crises. A lot different than our Defense Department. As analyst Emil Hokayem tweeted, quote, Soleimani is effective partly because he is a professional fighter who lives like one and shows up on the battlefield, unquote. He frequently traveled to Iraq during the most violent years of the U.S. campaign in the country and coordinated the country's Shiite militias, even during a time when the U.S. would likely have arrested him if given a chance. And he keeps close watch over the battlefield dynamics from afar as well. Soleimani was responsible for Hezbollah's strategy at the Battle of Qasir, which kept a strategically crucial border city under the Assad regime's control, and perhaps the definitive confrontation of Syria's civil war, according to Dexter Filkin's 2013 profile of Soleimani. So we got to call in the Iranians. To pull our fat out of the fire. That's great.
Let's switch gears for a moment. The investigation into the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, continues because it's great for ratings, Gary. The media's pronouncement, together with that of the federal government's conclusion, is that the police officer is guilty, a full investigation to follow.
Mm. Yeah, it has been exactly that, Tom. And whatever happened to the rule of law? I mean, this is a fundamental right that this whole country is built on. And I think what we've been seeing this week, and look, I'm the first to say I don't have any idea what exactly happened on that street that resulted in the death of this young man. But I think what we're seeing in the streets is what we would normally call revolutionary justice. That is the mob, quote unquote, determining the process, the legal process. And Tom, I got to say, I think the Attorney General ought to be ashamed of himself to go to Ferguson and say to people there, look, I'm the Attorney General of the United States, but I'm also a black man. Now, obviously, he's a black man, but to say that as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States is the signal in some way that the color of your skin is going to determine what you do in this case. Imagine, Tom, if Ed Meese, when he was Attorney General of the United States under Ronald Reagan, imagine that Ed Meese had gotten involved in a shooting where a black cop had shot an unarmed white man, and that Meese had flown to that city, which was already in turmoil, and said on the record, look, I'm the Attorney General of the United States, but I am also a white man. The calls for his resignation, in fact, I don't believe Ed Meese or any other white Attorney General could get away in a racially charged case bringing up the color of his skin. For what purpose? Justice is supposed to be blind.
That there is a federal civil rights investigation for murder going on right now at all as a result of this is strictly and solely because the police officer is white. Eric Holder, as Andrew McCarthy points out in National Review, is guilty of precisely the very offense that he serially accuses his lessers of constantly committing. Eric Holder is a racial profiler. Eric Holder is the nation's top racial profiler. It's against the law for a federal investigation to start without any credible suspicion based on solid evidence of a race-based crime. There's no solid evidence of a race-based crime here, yet Eric Holder has made this cop, who may well be guilty of something. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. He may well have abused his authority. But Holder's made him the subject of a civil rights investigation for one reason, because he was white. Now, this jumping to conclusion, right? This is the same administration that still doesn't have enough evidence 5 years later to conclude that Nidal Hassan's jihadist mass murder in Texas was not an act of workplace violence, that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a secular organization, as the CIA chief called it. They gave the benefit of the doubt to Iran. They continue to give the benefit of the doubt to Iran. They're convinced there's not a smidgen of corruption at the IRS. But Darren Wilson? I mean, no sooner had looting started than this Justice Department civil rights murder probe began. It's outrageous.
Tom, I did not get the figures for the show. And now that I think about it, it would have been good figures to get. And I'm thinking here of greater St. Louis. But you could mention any metropolitan area, Detroit, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, et cetera. Have there been in these communities instances of white police officers or police officers generally? I want to remind people that when the police officer engaged in a shooting is black, the Al Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons of the world do the same thing, actually. They still attack the police. In fact, I've heard Sharpton say, once you put on that uniform, you're not a black man anymore, you're a blue man, referring to the police. And still says that the police oppress local citizens. Now, back to the original point. Are there incidents every year of white policemen or policemen generally killing black youth? Yes, there are. And every one of those incidences are investigated. Sometimes the policeman is exonerated. Sometimes the policeman is imprisoned. It depends on the circumstances and what can be proven. But what is the proportion of those deaths of teenage or young black men at the hands of the police compared to the number of young black men in St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, you name the big city, Atlanta, et cetera, that die at the hands of black thugs that live in their communities, gangbangers, drug pushers, all sorts of riffraff. And Tom, that's what's holding back minority communities. That's one of the big reasons the schools don't work. When I was Undersecretary of Education, we quickly noticed that there were higher truancy rates among black children in our big cities than there were among white kids in the suburbs. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that truancy. It may be that the family literally doesn't have an alarm clock. We found out that was a factor in some of these cases. The kid just wasn't awakened in time. Or that there wasn't a responsible parent at home. Drug addiction, alcoholism,
no
et cetera,
kidding.
Plays a role. But when you actually interviewed the kids that were missing school repeatedly and said, why are you missing school? 9 times out of 10 in the research we did, that child said, I'm afraid to
I'm scared. They're
going to
get my ass, man. You think I'm going to go to school and get my ass shot off? Are you crazy, man?
Pushed on me. The kids didn't say, I don't go to school because I'm afraid I'm going to run into a cop on the way to school. They were afraid they were going to run into the bad actors that make these communities unlivable, communities that can't teach.
They'd be afraid they're going to run into Big Bubba. That's right, on the way to school, yeah. And since I can't fit my 9mm with the silencer in my lunchbox, I'm staying home. Hey, this cutting off heads is spreading faster than Ebola, man. Look at this. This was over in London the other day.
Called to an incident just after 1 o'clock, Nightingale Road in Edmonton. That's right in the north of London. They had reports of a man armed with a knife. They had local officers there as well as firearms officers who attended the scene. And when they got there, according to police, they found a woman who was collapsed in a garden area and she was pronounced dead at the scene. Now, they haven't spoken to the woman's next of kin, the Scotland Yard is saying. And so because of that, they are not officially divulging the nature of her injuries. But it's our understanding that she was beheaded. We don't know the type of weapon or weapon used, according to the police. There have been some reports circulating that it was a machete. That's unconfirmed reports at this stage. In terms of what happened to the police, well, they arrested a 25-year-old man. He was arrested by firearms officers on suspicion of murder, and he's in custody at the moment, and police are emphasising that they're not looking for anyone else in connection with this incident. A firearms officer was injured during the course of the arrest. He is believed to be suffering from a broken wrist, and officers used taser, presumably to bring the suspect under control. In terms of motive, well, these are clearly early days in the investigation. Officers are always trained to keep an open mind, not to rule anything in or rule anything out. But they're not looking for anyone else, and at this stage, they do not believe this incident is terrorism-related. And indeed, it's being handled by officers from the Homicide and Serious Crime Command, hasn't been passed to the Specialist Operations Branch, which is the unit that handles terrorist incidents.
Well, we can't be sure the race of this beheader, but we do know that this 82-year-old lady was growing watermelon in her garden. That may give us a clue. Well, if you're one of those people that walk around looking down at the ground, you better get your ass straightened out, because you better be looking up, because these drones are going to be everywhere. Let's listen to this training exercise. I think it's over in England. I forget exactly, but they're putting up those drones, baby. Keep an eye on you so they can zap you from above.
It is the latest weapon in a soldier's armory. Drones or unmanned aerial vehicles give them eyes in the sky. This mini one, the Italian Strix, provides a constant feed of live pictures. As does the Raven, launched by hand. The battles of the future will not be fought with just bombs and bullets, with eyes focused on computer screens as much as down the sight of a rifle. And even those troops are being directed by the drone above.
As we look at a digital age where the warfighter realizes both in his civilian life and in his duty life the importance of information technology, he treats the computer as part of his weapon cache that he uses to employ against the enemy.
From a remote Norwegian airbase, NATO has been carrying out its biggest test yet of its ability to gather and share intelligence. Using spy planes of all shapes and sizes, these are the ones we were allowed to see. To the more secret, like satellites and the remotely piloted Global Hawk, able to scan an entire country from 11 miles high in just one journey. And this is the nerve center where they're getting fed all that information, either from satellites or spy planes or drones or listening stations on the ground. It's the kind of intelligence cell they'd need to track, for example, Russian military movements on the border with Ukraine, or to try to spot those missing schoolgirls abducted in Nigeria. The challenge is how to share all this information, especially when it involves different nations operating different systems. This trial aims to break down the digital divide
to get the technology to speak the same language.
When a NATO operation kicks off, you don't know who's going to show up. You don't know what nations are going to be available. You don't know what capabilities they're going to bring. And so the idea is to have a common set of procedures, a common set of processes, and then train all the individuals who are going to potentially be serving in those roles. So when they show up, regardless of what nation they're from, they can perform those roles the same.
The military believe all this intelligence will make targeting more accurate and limit collateral damage. Though ultimately, it's still about directing the use of lethal force, whether from land, air, or sea. Even in a digital age, they'll still be using bombs and bullets. Jonathan Beale, BBC News, Norway.
Well, of course they'll still be using bombs and bullets. They've got giant warehouses all over the world full to the top with this crap that they got to get rid of. And what better way of getting rid of a bomb than dropping it on somebody, leading his little burrow down a trail in the desert or something like that? You know as well as I do, the arms race is on to develop anti-drone drones. We got to get the boys working on that out in a weapons of mass destruction yard. We need an anti-drone device. And so that'll be the next part of the struggle. See, the arms race goes on no matter what. But they got this NATO summit going on over there in Wales, figuring how they can get in a war with Russia. The alliance is expected to agree to plans to create a rapid reaction force of around 5,000 troops ready to deploy in Eastern Europe within 48 hours. There you go, boys and girls. But NATO is also investing its intelligence gathering spending more than $1.7 billion on new unmanned spy planes or drones. Ah, military-industrial complex, business is great. Business is wonderful. Whoa, where can I invest? Where can I become a shareholder in this? Yeah. And you thought it was all over in Europe and Eastern Europe? Well, don't leave the Asians out. Here we go.
In overall terms, it's not a massive increase in defense spending, but it is the first significant increase that we've seen in a very long time. But I think what's really significant about this is the shift in emphasis in Japan's whole defense strategy. So Japan used to have a defense strategy based in the main islands here, mainly looking north to Russia to defend against a Russian invasion during the Cold War. Now the whole shift is to the south and to the west, and to Japan's long chain of islands, which the Japanese government believes are increasingly under threat from China's increasing military power and China's increasingly expansionist desires in the East China Sea, particularly around the disputed islands that they've been arguing over for the last year or so. And so this is a shift to buy lots of new equipment, to form a new amphibious assault force, and it's putting, if you like, military forces behind the Japanese government's stance, which is to stand up to China and to say, we will not back down over these territorial disputes.
Wow. Business is great. Industrial complex. Come on, get those workers in there making plenty of money working there and building that stuff. Well, hell, it could be almost like back in the 60s when we were building ICBMs and all that kind of stuff. When I worked for Douglas Aircraft and they were building ICBMs and shooting them off downrange there to Kwajalein out of Vandenberg Air Force Base. Man, we used to sit on the back porch and watch those vapor trails go down south, man. Yeah, we're back in business again. Dr. Strangelove is alive. He's alive and he's ready to go. And he learned to love war, love to bomb. Invest your money in weapons. Get rich. That's it for today. Terrible Tommy's off and clear, and I'll see you tomorrow. What is tomorrow? Freya's Day. That'll be the 5th of August. No, September. Boy, get your mind right, boy. 14-5. And get yourself a drone. Everybody needs a drone. everybody. Wait till they start equipping drones with biological agents. Whoa, will that be fun?
Sagas of the South. The Mounted Maniac, General William T. Sherman, the Jewish Contribution to the Conduct of War. Letter from General Sherman to General Grant, January 1865. Quote, our method of warfare is different from that in Europe. We are not fighting against enemy armies, but against an enemy people. Both young and old, rich and poor, must feel the iron hand of war in the same way as the organized armies. In this respect, my march through Georgia was a wonderful success. End quote. Both the date and the author of this letter must appear extraordinary to every Christian. How could an American general write such a monstrous thing at that particular time? The most noble minds and hearts of the Aryans were then making every effort to humanize warfare as far as possible. On the other hand, the son of a lawyer, General William Tecumseh Sherman, had invented a new warfare that was directed against the civilian population. The Jewish-trained Sherman was the inventor of locust strategy. His doctrine was, where I have been, the war has ceased, because all forms of life no longer exist. It involves nothing more nor less than the suppression of humane warfare. General Robert E. Lee said, there are things a gentleman does not do. Sherman's strategy is the art of war employed by the unsuccessful. It is necessary to bear this in mind when considering Sherman's methods. He was unsuccessful, but by no means untalented. It was his fate always to have to fight against enemies better than himself. He never won a success against an enemy of equal strength. He usually fought against weaker foes and was defeated by their superior military ability. He owed his greatest military success, the occupation of the town of Atlanta, not to his own skill, but to a mistake made by his enemy. In the order of the day to his troops, after the occupation of Atlanta, on the 8th of September, 1864, Sherman said, quote, we must admit that the enemy opposed us with skill and endurance. At last he made the long-awaited mistake and sent his cavalry to our rear much too far to be able to recall them. The price of his mistake, as we have already said, was Atlanta.
Yeah. I saw the spirit.